Today on Critical Moves, we're going to be interviewing the developer behind the upcoming RTS game, Fungal Front. Tim's joined me. Hi, Tim.
Hey, everyone. How are you doing?
And we're delighted to have Matt on the show. How are you, Matt?
Great. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. We're very pleased that you agreed to do this. We promised to go easy on you, honest.
Well, we'll see how it goes.
Matt's developing a game called Fungal Front, and you can wishlist it on Steam. So please check the link in the description of this episode and go and support indie developers. But Matt, can you give us some idea of what Fungal Front is about, please?
Yes, it's a sci-fi RTS that we're building alongside a couple of artists who are offering up their free time to create a couple of models for us. Do some music for us and some sound effects. But it's based on a concept of a superbug posing a huge threat to humanity in around 40 years' time. So obviously a superbug being something that's developed as a result of overuse of antibiotics by humans. And so they've been looking for a cure on Earth and have been unable to find anything that can solve the problem. And so they start looking in outer space. It just so happens, of course, that they happen to have developed warp speed time travel. I mean, space travel, not time travel. They've discovered a couple of planets outside of the solar system, one of them being Mycopia, which is a fungal planet, host to a different life form. Primarily of a fungal nature. They get there and they find that they can extract the serum, which seems to hold some promise in curing the disease and the superbug.
So that's quite an interesting, it's certainly different, isn't it? You know, I mean, that's really grounded in real world science in terms of, I think we've all seen on the news about the ineffectiveness of antibiotics. And
right.
I've got three kids and they will only give them if it's essential or urgent. You know, right. Most of the time it's a case of don't take them because we're developing a resistance to them. What was the thought behind that? Because it's a very grounded subject matter in a very science fiction game.
Right. Well, you know, I've always wanted to build an RTS. And so I kind of started from a very simple foundation of just kind of putting blocks around on a stage. And I got to a point where the game was becoming playable, but didn't really have much appeal. And so it was at that point that I enlisted the help of my creative wife, who happens to have a great affinity for mushrooms. And so she said, well, she'd love to be involved, but she doesn't want to do the whole post-apocalyptic warfare, which a lot of people tend to go for. She'd rather try and do something interesting, and we can come up with a story together. So we kind of just threw ideas back and forth. You know, we've been keeping an eye on the superbug situation as well. Coming from a country, I'm originally from South Africa, and in South Africa, you get antibiotics for almost anything. And so you quickly learn how you start to become resistant to that quite quickly. Yeah, it takes longer and longer to get better. You start feeling the effects on your immune system. And we wanted to kind of create something around that idea that incorporated mushrooms. And obviously mushrooms being the origin of all life, at least that's what scientists have established. We figured it would be good for humans to have found the cure on a planet like Mycopia.
Yeah, it is quite original, yeah, indeed. I kind of like it. I find it refreshing that it's not yet another "would you have it," right?
Right.
That is quite interesting. How many of you are working on this? Is it the two of you?
So it's my wife and me. So my wife does the artwork. She's kind of the creative director, so she helps with anything art-related, whether it comes to the environment or the creatures or that type of thing. And then we've got another artist helping us called Syphotic on Twitter. His first name is Jordan. He's someone I reached out to because I really liked his art. I really liked his art style, and I thought he'd be a good fit for the project. And he volunteered to make a whole bunch of models for us for the human race. And so he's done all of the human faction models, including the buildings and the tanks. I modeled a couple of the units, so the Guardian, which is my profile picture, and then also the mech. But most of the artwork is done by either Jordan or Chrissy, my wife. And then we've got a couple of other artists who are making some music for us. Yeah, we've got another member of the team called James, who has been getting into game development over the past 2 years. And so he's been helping a lot with testing and refinement of gameplay. He and I do playtesting quite often. So yeah, a couple of times a week, we'll have a match against each other, see how the game's working.
Do you need any more playtesters?
Absolutely. We always need playtesters.
Well, you've got two volunteers here.
Excellent. Yeah, that'll be great. Yeah, we're actually planning on putting together a bunch of playtesters in an upcoming test that we're planning on doing.
Yeah, lovely. It's a lot of hats to wear, I suppose, if you're such a small team and you're developing like a full RTS, because yeah, the models is a big thing, the programming, the animation, the textures, and like you mentioned, the music and everything. That's kind of a lot to deal with for such a small team.
Absolutely. Yeah, the scope is enormous. Yeah, James and I actually worked on a game jam recently, and we realized that we're actually able to achieve a whole lot in 10 days. So sometimes we look at this project and wonder, like, why is it taking so long? But the scope of an RTS, as you say, is enormous. There are so many moving parts.
Did you realize just how much work was involved before you started this?
You know, of course, I'm an optimist. So I always go in thinking everything's going to take 2 to 3 months. Yeah, in fairness, I think if I'd stuck with the original plan, I probably could have been done in maybe a year. But, you know, I'm the kind of person who really likes to iterate on everything I build. So, you know, I say we, but obviously there are artists and I do the development. So I did all of the development and I did it for a year to a point where the game was running. I felt quite nicely in a single player mode, but the multiplayer wasn't where I wanted it to be. So I spent another year refining that, playtesting with James, and eventually about 6 months ago, I got to the point where I said, look, this is not going to work, for multiplayer. And I believe if you're making an RTS, you must have multiplayer and it must work well. And so it was working well, but I decided I'm going to rebuild the whole engine, using a deterministic engine. So that it worked seamlessly.
And for the multiplayer, will you be able to play with the fungal faction, or will it...
Yeah, so we're planning on incorporating multiple modes. So we've seen by watching the industry and a lot of games coming out that single player seems to be where 75% of the players are.
Yeah.
And
at least.
Yeah, and I think initially, I was pretty focused, like I said, on multiplayer, and I'm realizing more and more that we must make sure we cater to both sides. So we're going to release it in October. We're planning on releasing a demo, which will be multiplayer and single player, and we're planning on releasing that as a single mission that you would play, but you would play as the humans. And then once we release the game into early access, then you'll be able to play as both races. But yeah, look, if you are going to play the multiplayer, it will be either co-op or we're going to release 1v1. But that I think we'll do at a later point because there's a lot of refinement that needs to come there.
So why RTS then, Matt? Because we've done a couple of episodes on RTS games. Tim will remember this. The second episode we ever did was about the RTS Renaissance. It was actually the first episode that Tim hosted.
Right.
Do you feel we're in a bit of a renaissance? We asked Brandon Castile, who is the lead game designer for Tempest Rising, the same question. He said no, we're not, which I thought was quite a brave position to take for somebody who was just about to launch an RTS yeah. game, which is probably quite a big budget to it.
Interesting.
Do you think we're in a renaissance?
Absolutely. I think there's going to be a massive resurgence of RTS players in the next year. I'm looking at a lot of the games that are coming out. I think that there's going to be a huge shift in games, in interest in RTSs. I think that right now a lot of games are focused on very short loops, very short attention spans, very action-based, trying to keep your attention. But I'm also seeing that people are getting a bit frustrated with that. They're feeling like a lack of progression in their ability to play games that are engaging. I think that they're looking for something with a bit more depth. And so I think there are a couple of problems that the genre is facing right now, but I think there is a big change coming. I think that there are a lot of really interesting RTSs that are coming up. And yeah, Tempest Rising is doing very well. I looked on SteamDB and they seem to have sold something ridiculous, like 250,000 copies.
It's good numbers. But it's quite interesting you say this about there being a change in the genre, because you're aware of the game Battle Aces,
yes.
which wasn't developed, and that was posited to it was positioned to be something to make RTS games much more accessible. Matches only took 10 minutes. It was more action orientated. You could drop in, play a 10-minute game, and drop out. And they've pulled the plug.
Yeah, I saw that, and I think. I don't want to presume to know the problem, but I think I believe what went wrong was that they've put too much focus on competitive multiplayer. I really enjoyed Battle Aces. I think it was a lot of fun, very well built. I was very interested in their pathing algorithm and how they had built this RTS without using a deterministic engine, simply by putting clever things into their nav mesh. Which was really smart how they did that. I actually did a post about that. But I think the biggest problem we're facing is that there is not enough of a single player aspect of RTSs these days, and not enough of a captivating story where people want to identify with the characters. I'm reading a book called The Art of Game Design, and one of the things that is stressed in there quite a lot is making the player feel like they are overpowered. So much so that they want to play against their friends. So, you know, let them play the single player campaign, feel overpowered, and they can just destroy these shroomies, or, you know, vice versa. They could play as the shroomies and just destroy the humans. They feel so good at this game that they start challenging their friends. And that's how multiplayer should come organically. It shouldn't be a matter of, well, let's just beat each other up and see who's best and then fight with each other afterwards.
I mean, with me and Tim, you have players on both sides of the coin. I avoid multiplayer games, whereas Tim loves multiplayer games. It's refreshing to see a game being developed where the developer is saying, you know, we actually acknowledge the importance of the single player aspect. Because a lot of people who are developing games, they focus on getting the mechanics right around multiplayer rather than saying we need to create an experience for people to enjoy narratively.
So something that I said in a previous episode as well was, I figure a lot of people who are working on strategy games, they're very focused on the analytical part and not so much on the theme, on the storytelling. And a lot of people who would be much more interested into those elements would go to different genres to develop a game, like more of an RPG or something like that. And so it is very refreshing to hear a developer being more attentive to those elements, because I think you're absolutely right. And that's exactly what would bring people to the genre.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I love multiplayer RTS as well. You know, up until probably last week, for the past 3 to 4 years, I've played StarCraft religiously every day. I mean, I'm only a Diamond League player, but I love the competitive aspect of it. It's a lot of fun for me. It's really engaging. And at the end of a work day, to just sit down and just go and play on the ladder a couple of games really has been great for me.
Did Tatsu say similar when we interviewed him about how it was important for you to have single player as a hook to get people involved? It's almost like single player sells the games and multiplayer keeps them on board or keeps them playing.
Well, it's also the numbers, and it's the same numbers that Beyond All Reason sees as well, is that it's a huge majority that never even touches multiplayer, is not even interested in multiplayer. And I don't, like, as personally as someone who enjoys multiplayer thoroughly as well, I can't entirely blame them, because it can be a very jarring experience. It's very competitive, it's very unforgiving, if you're not ready to invest a lot of time in it and not just a time in total, but your initial time until you feel like you get like semi-decent, you're just not going to have a good time. And yeah, no, I get that.
Yeah, I fully agree. And I think one of the other problems facing new players is Smurfs. You know, you get a lot of really high-level players who just have fun destroying brand new players. And that doesn't leave a good taste in the mouth of the new player. And they tend not to come back after that.
So with those experiences in mind, then, Matt, what are you planning to do with Funko Front to change the dynamics?
Well, I think that a model that's quite common... a model that's quite common right now with multiplayer RTS is to offer it for free. And I think that's part of the problem. If you are not having to pay for the game, you can create multiple accounts and it doesn't cost you anything. So, you know, I think that it would work better to sell the game as a whole game with multiplayer, and you cannot create additional accounts. Otherwise, you'll just exploit it like everyone has done with Stormgate, with StarCraft, even with Battle Aces.
Yeah, it's a big problem in Beyond All Reason as well. It's a free game, free multiplayer, and people make new accounts. We have some smurf detection, but it doesn't catch everyone. And then people are not having a good time because they're getting smashed. Yeah,
I don't play multiplayer games, mainly for this kind of reason. So is this a situation where people are creating new accounts that they're lowered down the ladder? So with matchmaking, they're matched against new players, but of course they've got lots of history, which is then hidden to those new players, and they go in and they trounce them and they go, lols, that was lots of fun, and ruin it for new players.
Because they're mostly seeking to have the experience of winning, not so much of like an even fight.
It's pretty shitty behavior.
Unfortunately,
welcome to the internet.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to multiplayer gaming.
Okay, well, I'm out. I'm finished. Matt, so how did you get involved in game development then? Is it something you've always wanted to do? Or did you just, when we interviewed Tatsu, or rather when Tim and Jack interviewed Tatsu, he said that he kind of just fell into it during the pandemic. What's your story?
Well, I think I was about 10 or 11 years old when I first saw someone playing StarCraft. And I was so intrigued by this game because it was so different from any game that I'd seen before. I had played a couple of other PC games, I think like Duke Nukem and Doom and that type of game. But this was so very different. And I was very intrigued as to how you would make something like this, because this seems like something I would have a lot of fun building. So I said to the person playing, what would be involved? How would I make something like this? And obviously you're a kid and they're just laugh it off and say, come on, man, don't be ridiculous. you don't stand a chance. And I said, well, okay, let's say I could though, where would I start? And he picked up this big fat programming book and he said, you'd have to learn something like this. You'd have to read through a book like this just to get started. And I said, okay, can I read it? They kind of laughed it off and said, no, don't be silly. And then, they ended up giving me that book for my 12th birthday. So then I started reading it and I worked my way through it. And I made a couple of small scope games. Mostly platformers, but mostly all 2D games. I tried to get into 3D. It was just too much for my brain back then, even today. I really was very interested as to how I would go about building something like this. So I really just tried to apply my mind as much as I could. Unfortunately, as I turned around 18 or 19, I realized I could use this programming skill to make money. So I ended up focusing my career much more on software development than game development. There weren't really many opportunities for game development back then in the languages I was learning. But also on top of that, the games that I had built, I had accumulated about 10 of them. And my hard drive crashed when I was about 16, and I lost all of my games, all of my source code, and I just thought, no, I'm not doing this anymore. So I gave up, and the pandemic came, and I was looking for a way to connect more with my my kids, and we said, well, let's try and build a game together, and I think that was about 4 years ago.
It seems that that the pandemic has been a catalyst for quite a few people. And it's ironic that you're building a game about diseases. Not about diseases, but certainly with that as the backstory.
Right.
So what kind of playstyle can we expect then from Funko Front? Because We did an episode recently about the golden age of RTS, where it was all base building. It was all your Command and Conquers, your StarCrafts, and things like that. Are you aiming traditional, or can we expect something a little bit different?
I think, well, I'm aiming for a mix. One of my friends gave me the advice 4 years ago that I should try to make a game that is easy to play but difficult to master, and that's what I'm aiming for with Fungal Front. I want to make sure that I do a really good job of onboarding new players while making it obvious to really high level players that they can actually use their skills here as well if they choose to. So, for instance, when it comes to the builder unit, in StarCraft, you would normally have either an SCV or you'd have a probe or a drone, and they have different ways of building things. But what normally happens is that you need that unit to decide, are they going to go and build structures or are they going to harvest resources? And so what we've done with Fungal Front is the engineer has a builder drone above her that follows her everywhere that she goes. And so she can be mining, and if you just choose her, or you choose from your UI, your HUD, a building that you'd like to build, the drone will autonomously go to that position while she continues to harvest. So we're kind of lowering the skill level, but only to a degree where it doesn't impact the outcome and kind of lower it too much. I'm looking for a balance, I guess, of making it playable, but not frustratingly difficult to get basic mechanics right. You don't want to have to, for instance, micro your workers, you know. So another thing that I've done is in StarCraft, it's advisable, and I've never done it, that you micro your workers in such a way that you send them to the correct number to a mineral field and the correct number to this mineral field. I've never done that because, for me, I'm not that level of a player. But what I've done on Fungal Front is to say, okay, each route where you'd extract serum from has 8 extraction points. If you just right-click on the primary route, it will choose the closest point for you, and that will be that worker's point where they extract from. You don't have to go and choose the very specific point where they're going to extract from. If you have 8 workers selected and you right-click on the routes, they're each going to go to the correct point where they should be extracting from. So, yeah, I'm trying to simplify it, but also, I think onboarding is just so very difficult that I need to make it simple enough that it's still fun, but not too simple that it feels like it's pointless.
Yeah, it seems like with some quality of life improvements and some consideration of like a respect for the player's time and effort, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
It's vital, that onboarding, isn't it? It's absolutely vital that it's done right, because otherwise you're just going to turn people off straight away, and that's not, yeah. And it must be quite difficult to find that balance between making the game accessible to new players but also appealing to high level players. So I want it accessible, Tim wants it high level, so right. you've got to appeal to both of us, you know, and
absolutely.
And so
if I can say something on that note, Al, or did you have?
Yeah, go on.
If you don't mind me being a little bit harsh, Matt,
go for it.
About the visuals. To me, visuals are not at all the most important part of a game, and not even remotely, not even in any of the top three. It's not top three, not top five of the most important things of an RTS game, especially an RTS game. But yet, to get that first appeal from players, I guess, if I'm looking, oh, what game am I going to play now? I'm going to have a look. Oh, what does this game look like? Or something like that. And I have to say, it doesn't look pretty, Fungal mm-hmm. Front, at all.
Right.
It is unique in this direction it has gone. I mean, the fungal mm-hmm. thing, where the units move over the ground and it lights up the ground. It is quite cool, but it's not right. pretty at all, I would say.
Yeah.
And then I guess I would put into question the idea of making a 3D game with full 3D models and textures and animation and so on with such a small team. Since it does add such a huge amount of difficulty of making something that looks nice.
Right. I actually agree with you. However, I'm not sure whether you're looking at the recent footage or if you're looking at the Steam page. So I will post a link here. I actually can't send it because I don't have a keyboard. So it's actually on my Twitter profile. I would like to see whether you feel differently about the newer aesthetic, because as I mentioned, I did a full rebuild of the whole system. And part of that was a visuals upgrade as well. And so I know that the previous visuals were really not great. But I do definitely think we're getting closer with the most recent visuals that we've been doing. If you look on June 16th on my profile, if you have access to it, I made a post of the most recent visuals.
Yeah, I was looking at your YouTube channel for Fungal Front.
Right. Okay. Those are unfortunately much older visuals.
There you go, Tim.
There you go. So we're getting closer. Of course, it still needs work, but we changed render pipelines as well. So we were using Universal Render Pipeline, which is much lower quality. And now we've gone to the HDRP, which is the high definition render pipeline. So the visuals should start improving. There's still a lot to do with the environment. We feel like we're definitely improving there.
Oh, yeah, no, I see this video, and indeed it looks a whole lot better. Again, for me, I would play a really ugly game that is really fun to play, personally. But I do know that, like, for a lot of people to get hooked into a game, they really need that drawing in of, like, ooh, this is pretty. I wonder what this is like.
I agree. Yeah, I do think visuals are very important. In order to get fully immersed in a game, you really have to make it semi-believable, or at least interesting enough that you'd want to spend time in that world.
But this must have cost you a lot of effort to get to this point, no?
Yeah, it has. It's been a lot of work. There are, like I say, many aspects involved in building this type of game. It's taken quite a bit of effort.
As a counter to... I understand where Tim's coming from in terms of the visuals, but as a counter, it is so unique. I mean, I can't, and I'm 47 years old. I've been playing games since really they began, you know, since the mid 80s, if not before. Yeah. And I've never seen anything like it in terms of the visual style. It's the kind of thing that makes you go, I need to have a deeper look at that. So I can see the appeal of, and I use space commas, I can see the appeal of an ugly game to get people to say, you know, to, it's like you give it a second look, it's like, well, hang on, what's this? Rather than another post-apocalyptic or futuristic war setting, which you just skip over because you've seen it all before. This is something which makes you go, hang on, this is worth a second look now. So I can see the appeal. And it's almost like a double-edged sword, isn't it? You want it to be visually striking so that people say, I want to have a look at that. But also at the same time, you need to make it appealing enough so that when they do look at it, they say, well, actually, this is something I want to try.
Yeah.
And it looks very alien as well. Like, it feels properly alien. You feel like you're on a planet very far away.
Great. Well, that's what we're hoping to go for. I think we're definitely aiming higher than this even. But we kind of feel like we want a starting point to give the player an idea of what to expect. You know, obviously when you release into early access, that's still considered a beta level for most players, at least on games. But we're not even there yet. We're just currently on the demo, kind of pre-alpha level. Once we release the actual demo, we'd consider that an alpha at least. I think our plan is just to iteratively improve on the visuals. So, you know, I appreciate feedback, which is direct, because it's helpful. You know, at least then you know that you're making progress when you're making adjustments that on something that you were previously self-conscious on. So, for instance, I previously looked at the game and felt, I don't know if this looks great, but it's actually refreshing for me to have direct feedback telling me, well, that didn't look great, and this does look a little better.
You're always going to get direct feedback from Tim. He can't help himself.
It's great.
I want to change tack a little bit, and so the story is, it's 2062, antibiotics have stopped working, so humanity goes out to find the cure for the common bacterial diseases which are plaguing the population.
Right.
We're the bad guys, aren't we?
Yes. Well, that's, I mean, yeah, okay, you've just given away the whole plot.
That's fine. I'll cut this out. I'll
no, no.
No. But it's, and this really, yeah. It really plays into the themes. I think a lot of themes that we have in the modern world around exploitation, around taking everything. You know, this seems to be a situation where humanity is going out and saying, "Well, we found a planet where we can find something which is going to fix us, and we don't care what's there." You know, was
absolutely yeah.
Was the moral element of that a conscious decision, or is that a bit of an accident?
Well, we want the player to feel like they are the ones making that choice. So I'll tell you what we're planning as part of the campaign. At a certain point in the campaign, when you realize that the humans are actually greedy and heartless, you get to decide, now, do you want to continue as the Shroomies or as the humans?
Oh, wow. Oh, that is very, very interesting. I love that. Because that is one thing that I find also really difficult in RTS campaigns, is to get people to care about the characters, because there's a lot of distance between the player and all the characters and everything like that. And so I find it curious how sometimes RTS campaigns can bridge that gap. Like I think yeah. Warcraft 3 is a good example of very heavy character driven campaign, but then like giving choices like that to the player, I think is a great way to bridge that gap as well.
Yeah, we think so. I think it'll be really good for players to make the decision and then also see the consequences of that decision. So one of the consequences will be that, okay, so you've just played a mission as the humans, and now at this point, the cinematics have led you to realize that the humans are actually being greedy. Then when you choose to play as the Shroomies, you will then actually fight against the base that you created as the humans. Okay. So yeah, we're kind of trying to make it non-linear in a way. Of course, you know, there are effectively only two routes that the campaign will go, but you could try both of them and kind of see what it's like to be ruthless humans and then also the cute defenseless Shroomies that are not so defenseless.
I really like that idea.
Are they conscious?
Yeah, absolutely. They're connected through the queen, which runs through the hive. So the ground lighting that you were seeing on the Steam page, which we've not yet brought into this version, we're actually I'd be interested to see whether you think that's worth bringing in. But that's actually part of a mycelic network, and that's the way that fungi run. They have a mycelic underground network which connects all of them, and that's how they communicate with one another. And so the queen communicates with them through the mycelic network coming from the hive, and so they're conscious in that way.
Had you been watching The Last of Us when you thought of this idea?
No, it's actually funny is that my wife and I were watching The Last of Us, the newer one, and we saw that and we were like, hey, they stole our idea. yeah, of course, there's his original. But no, it was just doing a lot of – I've done so much research on mushrooms ever since this idea that we come up with ideas like a mycelic network, and we think that would be brilliant to bring that in.
I love how you've – obviously put a lot of thought into the world building aspect of it. That's really cool.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, another thing, of course, you know, it's rather unbelievable, for instance, that you would just be able to have a drone that builds a building. What is it building it out of? And so we've also come up, I did some research and found this concept of optical tweezing. I don't know if you've heard of it, but you're effectively pulling ions out of the sky, out of the oxygen. And you can actually tweeze them together into forming molecules and particles. And so it's actually technology available today on a very, very small scale. So because we're 40 years in the future, you know, that'll be used as a justification for you being able to construct these buildings as well.
There's clearly a lot of thought that's gone into this, Matt. And I think that the risk, or what we see a lot of in RTS games or in game development in particular, is that people say, well, I want to build a game, and then they tack on a story, almost as like a vehicle to present the next mission, and then the next mission, and the next mission.
Yes.
And clearly there's been a lot of thought that's gone into explaining the science behind this, you know. I mean, I don't have a question. I should say I really appreciate that, because that's going to get people like me, slightly above average intelligence, to say, oh, so that's the reason why that works. And of course, people well above average intelligence, such as Tim and yourself.
Yeah. You're funny, Al.
I know.
Yeah. bringing out the jokes.
I guess I have some more questions about the gameplay mechanics itself. Like, for example, are you looking to implement a rock, paper, scissors system, or are you opting for something perhaps different?
I've been asked that question a lot. I think, once again, I'll say to a degree. One thing in StarCraft that actually took me a very long time to get accustomed to was light versus heavy units, armored versus non-armored. That type of thing, I feel like it can be very challenging to onboard someone with those types of mechanics. And they might get a bit frustrated thinking, okay, well, I've built 100 units of this type, but they can't counter 5 units of the other. Why is that? That feels very frustrating to me. So I kind of want to find a balance where you have units that are obviously good counters to other types of units, but they're not the only counter. So I feel like there needs to be a balance, and there needs to be a way for average RTS players to counter attacks simply by having a big enough army, because they've worked hard enough to expand their economy. You get enough unit producing structures. And that's another thing, of course, you know, we've also made it that each unit producing structure is able to run independent of your other units, other structures. So if you have 10 barracks, you can have 10 enforcers at a time, or 10 guardians at a time. And so, you know, it's a matter of balancing snowballing, anti-snowballing, and rock, paper, scissors.
And this whole setup screams asymmetry as well. And
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I take it that was a very conscious decision as well. How does that manifest? How does that look in the game? Are we talking a very traditional human faction and then something completely left field?
Well, yes. It's so if you were to play as the humans versus the Shroomies have units like, it's actually called a Shroomling, which it's just kind of a fat mushroom that rolls, and it operates like a Baneling in StarCraft. So it can take out a bunch of Guardians at once. Then you've also got the Mantis, which is a heavier unit, which has, so it has a striking ability to go and destroy tanks, for instance. But it also has a psychedelic enchantment effect, where it's area of effect. And if there are 30 units and you hit your spell there, you're going to put them all in a daze where they're kind of just like dazed for a few seconds, so you can get closer, and then you can go slice them up. But the unit would be too slow to be effective against too many guardians. Then you've also got your static defense, of course. So we've got turrets for the humans. But then the Shroomies have a snake defense, where the snake can strike you and kind of one-shot your guardians, if they get too close to the hive. And so we're kind of just trying to figure out how we can make it asymmetrical, and not give one race an advantage that the other doesn't have. You know, also we've got air units. The Shroomies have the Shooing, which is a dragon that can shoot fireballs. So we're kind of trying to mix it up, also trying to keep the scope small enough that it's manageable. We can't afford to go for hundreds of units. We're trying to go for each faction having, let's say, 7 to 8 key units. And that would be kind of the extent of it.
You don't need 100 units. And I think we've discussed this before, haven't we, that sometimes units are just added for the sake of it. You'd rather have everything having a particular role, a particular use, not necessarily right. In like a rock, paper, scissors sort of way, but you want each of your units to be able to do something.
Yes, have a meaningful engagement with that unit, do something meaningful on the battlefield.
So other than StarCraft, which you say you play to quite a high level, Tim, you do as well, don't you?
I used to.
You used to, okay. Well, I can see a matchup coming on.
I'll get rid.
So other than StarCraft, what other games have influenced Funko Front?
I'd definitely say elements of Command & Conquer and Age of Empires. But I think we've also gotten inspiration from other sources like the movie Avatar, where you've got the humans coming in and destroying this, you know, this beautiful species that doesn't actually mean anyone any harm for their own benefit. So I'd say that's one of the, yeah, definitely one of the major influences. My wife actually got involved with RTS during COVID as well. She had never played an RTS before aside from Age of Empires. And yeah, I tried to teach her StarCraft by playing 1v1s with her. That was not a good idea. So what I learned very quickly was that it was much better to play 2v2s. So we would play against other people. And yeah, we actually did that every day for a few years. And so that also got her into RTSs. And I'd say about our two major influences, primary influences, are definitely StarCraft 2 and Avatar.
I can certainly see the parallels with Pandora from the Avatar series.
Great.
And I really love that. It's such a great setting. And I think that the morality that's going to come into that, especially when you say about the choice that you make. I'm actually really looking forward to this now.
Great.
Lovely. So remember playtesters, but talk me through what the roadmap looks like. And I appreciate that in game development, you know, things change and they change very quickly. What does the roadmap look like as it stands now?
Well, I think the demo is definitely... we're definitely aiming to release the demo in October. And I think that should give a lot of players a feel for the game, for the mechanics, and to decide whether this is something they'd like to play. Then we'll need to participate in Steam Next Fest closer to the release of Early Access. And given that you only get to participate in one Next Fest, you want to make sure that you've built up enough wish lists before you do that to actually make it worth your while. So I would hope that we're able to release the demo, a more refined version of the demo for Next Fest next year, which would be in around February. And that would signal to players that we were planning an early access release, hopefully a little bit later in the year. So I would like to release early access mid to late next year, if possible, but we want to make sure we get it right. We don't want to release something half-baked. And I'd like to go for early access mid to late next year, and full release would probably only be 6 months to a year after that, because we'd need to do a lot of work to get the cinematics right for the other missions. We want a fully playable campaign with the multiplayer aspect.
Are you considering Kickstarter or not?
I feel like Kickstarter works for a lot of people. We did consider it. I feel like I'm not comfortable doing it simply because I also have a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And I can't guarantee that my work isn't going to keep me busy. And I wouldn't want to be holding on to players' money knowing that I might not be able to deliver anytime soon.
I guess the early access is a first impression, and I guess that's quite important for players. Even if it's not a finished product, you still want something that is going to leave a positive impression on people. Right. But yeah, I guess I have another question about the economy of the game. So what's it looking like? How exponential is the economy? How is the decision making between investing into economy versus into aggression and so on?
Mm-hmm. Well, it would be, we'd have two resources. So the one is serum, which is what they're extracting from the roots. And then the other is going to be a gas / pollen. So it's pollen for the shroomies, but the humans call it a gas. So that gas is going to come from a separate structure, which is a tree with pollen balls on it. And they're going to find that to be a very good energy source, which is going to facilitate upgrades. and more advanced units. So I guess it's similar to StarCraft in that you have minerals and Vespian gas, where Serum is used to do basic base building and also to get some ground units and static defense. But if you want to go for a more late game army, you're going to have to get the gas, which will then allow you to build bigger units do your upgrades.
Finally then, Matt, just how weird are we going to get with Fungal Front? Because everything about the game, about the setting, is very real world and grounded in science in terms of the antibiotics, in terms of the, what was the lensing thing that you...
Optical tweezing, right.
You know, it's very grounded. Are we going to see things, you know, out there in terms of, you know, spore-powered super weapons and sentient fungus colonies and things like that as well?
Yeah, we love to be as creative as possible. So we won't close any doors to exciting mechanics that we could add or exciting concepts. It was actually one of my friends that asked if we could please have a psychedelic enchantment effect, just because he's such a massive fan of mushrooms. So we brought it in, made it happen. And I mean, it's in the previous version, but I haven't finished implementing it in the new one. But I've got everything ready for doing that. But yeah, we want to make it a fun game. We don't want to make it super serious. It needs to be enjoyable, but also interesting. So we won't limit ourselves. My wife is the most creative person I know, and she gets new ideas all the time. And so she's got a long list of them, a nice backlog for me, in effect. So yeah, we'll definitely be adding more.
Maybe we should have been speaking to her rather than you.
Wonderful.
Matt, thank you so much for coming and talking to us. It's been really enjoyable. You're clearly a very intelligent guy, and I'm very excited for Fungal Front. The link to the Fungal Front Steam page will be in the description of this episode, both on Spotify, etc., but also on our YouTube channel. Matt's going to give us some access to playtesting because we're going to bully him into doing it. Thanks very much for coming along. It's really appreciated. And thanks, Tim, for your not so harsh questions this time.
Always nice to see. I really look forward to seeing what comes out of this. It does look really promising.
Great. Well, yeah. Thanks very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You'll come back. You can come back and give us an update when we're closer to early access. Yeah.
I'll come back more prepared next time with Chrissy standing in the background ready to answer those questions.
Well, she can join in, man. You know, she can join in. It's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
This is Critical Moves Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Drop by the Discord. Matt's on the Discord. You can come and you can harass him if you want to know more about Fungal Front. I'm sure he'd be happy to answer your questions. Go to criticalmovespodcast.com for all of the ways to get in touch. And don't forget to check out that Steam link for Fungal Front. Thanks very much, guys. Thanks for listening, everybody. Take it easy. Goodbye.
Cheers.
Bye, guys.